Imagine buying an impenetrable solid titanium safe to hold, all your life savings.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
Now imagine a thief just bypasses your home alarm, walks right into your living room, and simply carries that incredibly heavy safe straight out the front door.
Oh man, I mean, you would absolutely panic.
Right, you'd panic. But today, we're actually going to look at why, in the digital version of that exact scenario, you might actually be perfectly fine.
Which sounds completely counterintuitive, I know.
It really does. But welcome to today's Cyber Mornings Daily Briefing on the Deep Dive. If you're joining us to get caught up on the most critical security events of the day, well, we are very glad you're here.
Definitely.
Our mission today is to break down three major stories, extract the practical impacts for you, and really just cut through the noise so you actually understand what is happening under the hood.
And we've got a lot of ground to cover this morning, honestly. The tactics we're looking at are just incredibly sophisticated. But whether we're analyzing enterprise software infrastructure or just personal password managers, there is a very clear, relentless pattern emerging.
Yeah, today's rundown covers a massive supply chain attack hitting Red Hat packages, a highly targeted spear phishing campaign aimed at the Afghan government, and a brute force attack on the popular password manager Dashlane.
And you are right about that pattern.
Yeah.
Yeah, because whether you're an enterprise developer writing code or a government official handling state finances or, just someone trying to keep your personal streaming account secure, today's stories really all revolve around one core theme.
Which is this evolving siege on digital identities.
Exactly. Attackers are shifting their methods constantly, but the ultimate prize, which is your credentials, that is always what they're after.
Okay, let's unpack this. We're starting with the supply chain. This is being called the Miasma campaign, right?
Yeah, the Miasma campaign. And this one is just a stark reminder of how fragile software dependencies actually are.
Oh, absolutely.
We're looking at a new iteration of a supply chain attack that researchers are calling the Mini Shai-Hulud campaign.
Mini Shai-Hulud, like the giant worms from Dune.
Exactly like Dune. It's a self-propagating worm. The threat actors managed to compromise NPM packages under the official Red Hat Cloud Services scope.
Wow.
Yeah, and their goal was simply to deliver this worm to steal credentials straight off of developer machines.
To put the concept of a supply chain attack into perspective for anyone listening, think of it like poisoning a city's water supply right at the treatment plant.
That's a great analogy.
Right, rather than a criminal trying to break into like thousands of individual houses to steal their bottled water, you just hit the
You hit
source.
the source, and the legitimate infrastructure does all the distribution work for you.
Exactly. Thousands of developers download what they fully believe is a trusted Red Hat package, and they just pull the malware right into their own workstations.
And the mechanism they use at that treatment plant level is called install time execution.
Which is terrifying.
It's a massive blind spot for a lot of development teams. When a developer types the command to install one of these compromised NPM packages, they usually just assume the code sits there harmlessly.
Right, like it's just dormant until they actively run their application.
Exactly. But NPM has this feature called pre-install hooks.
Meaning the malware runs while the developer is literally just sitting there watching the installation progress bar fill up on their screen.
Yes. Before the developer even realizes what is happening, this heavily obfuscated script just executes in the background.
Wow.
And it instantly starts scraping their local machine for highly sensitive data. I mean, we're talking GitHub Action Secrets, NPM tokens, Kubernetes, and Vault materials, SSH keys.
So it's just a comprehensive sweep of the developer's
A
credentials.
total sweep. But the exfiltration method is what really caught my attention with this one.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that because once it scoops up all those keys, it encrypts the stolen data and tries to send it to an Anthropic API endpoint.
Right.
Specifically, it reaches out to api.anthropic.com. And if that fails, it falls back to using the GitHub API to transmit the data. Wait, Anthropic?
Yep.
Like the company that makes the Claude AI, why on earth would they send stolen passwords to an AI company's server?
Well, think about what normal, everyday corporate web traffic looks like right now.
Okay.
Every developer in the world is sending API calls to Claude or OpenAI or GitHub Copilot all day long.
Oh, I see.
Right. So if a corporate firewall or some internal security tool sees a massive block of encrypted data going to an unknown IP address registered in, say, a foreign country, it blocks it instantly.
It sounds an alarm immediately.
Exactly. But if the firewall sees data going to an Anthropic endpoint, it just assumes it's a developer asking an AI to write some Python code, or debug a script.
That is wild. It just blends in perfectly with modern web traffic.
It is a brilliant evasion tactic. They are hiding the stolen data inside legitimate-looking API envelopes.
Wow.
And to add insult to injury, the malware actually leaves a cheeky little commit message on that GitHub API envelope.
I've read about this. It's ridiculous.
It literally reads, and I quote, "If you invalidate this token, it will nuke the computer of the owner," end quote.
So they are actively taunting the incident responders who are just trying to clean up the mess.
Totally taunting them.
Now, I do want to push back on the attribution here for a second.
Sure.
Because I was reading through the threat reports from Socket and Wiz, and they mentioned that an infamous cybercrime group called Team PCP.
Right, also known as UNC6780.
Exactly. They are linked to this Shai-Hulud worm. But the reports also noted that Team PCP open sourced the attack tools they built.
Yes, they did.
So if the tools are completely open source and just sitting out on the internet for anyone to use, doesn't that make definitive attribution nearly impossible? I mean, how do we actually know who is behind this specific Miasma campaign?
You've hit on a major, major frustration for threat intelligence teams, because it does make it nearly impossible.
I'd imagine.
Threat actors frequently open source their tools, or they deliberately leak their own builders, specifically to muddy the waters.
To hide in the crowd.
Exactly. When everyone from like a script kiddie in a basement to a highly sophisticated nation state has access to the exact same weapon, finding the fingerprints of the original creator just becomes a nightmare.
That makes sense.
But if we look past the who, what's fascinating here is the evolution of the attacker's focus.
What's changing about their focus?
Well, researchers at Wiz pointed out a really significant shift in this Miasma variant. Previous versions of this malware primarily focus on extracting secrets from the immediate local environment.
Like just the developer's laptop.
Right, just the laptop. But this new variant, it added data collectors specifically engineered for cloud identities, mainly Google Cloud Platform and Microsoft Azure.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it actively collects all the cloud identities that the infected machine has access to. That is a very clear pivot.
So they aren't just trying to compromise code repositories anymore.
No.
They want to leverage that developer's access to take over the underlying cloud infrastructure itself.
Exactly. And they're doing all of this while generating a uniquely encrypted payload for every single infection.
Which means the file signature changes
every single time. It makes tracking the specific versions of the malware incredibly difficult. Plus, researchers noted it actively avoids executing on Russian language systems.
Which is a behavioral trait it shares with older campaigns, like Glasswarm.
Precisely.
But I want to talk about Patient Zero here. Because how did they actually get this malicious code into the official Red Hat packages in the first place?
So this goes right back to our core theme of digital identities. Hmm. Whitentel, which is a dark web monitoring firm, detected a Red Hat employee's GitHub credential and an active session cookie just floating around in InfoStealer logs on the dark web.
Wait, when was this?
Back in April and May of 2026.
Okay, so an employee got their laptop infected somehow, maybe by downloading something they shouldn't have, and a piece of malware scraped their session cookie and sold it on a dark web marketplace.
That is the most likely scenario, yes. Mm. The attackers bought or scraped those logs, hijacked the employee's authenticated session, and then pushed malicious code directly to two Red Hat Insights repositories.
Unbelievable.
And they did it using something called an orphan commit.
Let's explain that, because I think a lot of people assume that pushing code to an enterprise repository requires, you know, multiple layers of review.
Normally, yes.
So how does an orphan commit bypass a standard code review process?
Well, normally a commit is attached to a branch in the Git tree, right?
Yeah.
Where reviewers can see it, they test it, they approve it through a pull request.
Right.
An orphan commit is essentially a ghost floating completely outside of that standard timeline.
A ghost commit.
Yeah. If you have the right stolen access token, you can inject it directly into the repository's backend using the API.
So it bypasses the branch history entirely.
Entirely, meaning it never triggers those standard pull request alarms that the human reviewers are actively monitoring.
Wow. So if you're a developer or a security engineer listening to this right now, the practical takeaway is vital. Standard cleanup is not going to save you here.
Not at all.
You can't just run an uninstall command on the npm package or delete your node_modules folder and assume you're safe.
You really can't. This malware establishes background execution and multiple developer tool persistence mechanisms.
So what should they do?
You have to actively audit your configuration files. You need to check your Claude settings JSON, your VS Code tasks JSON, and your GitHub workflows.
Really dig into the hidden files.
Yeah. And if you are running CI/CD systems, you need to suspend affected workflow runs entirely and ruthlessly invalidate any build artifacts produced during that exposure window.
So basically, assume everything that touched that environment is completely compromised.
Yes. Assume total compromise of that environment.
It's a massive headache. But it leads us to a really crucial question. The entire Miasma supply chain attack was made possible because one single employee's session cookie ended up in an InfoStealer log.
Just one cookie.
So if a single stolen cookie can compromise a massive software supply chain, you have to ask, how did the attacker get that cookie onto the employee's machine in the first place?
Right.
They didn't guess it. They engineered it. Which brings us to the kind of highly targeted social engineering we're seeing in our second story today, which is Operation Xenofiscal.
Yeah, and this one is a textbook highly tailored espionage campaign. It really highlights how attackers exploit everyday trust.
So we're looking at a spear phishing campaign orchestrated by a group called Sidecopy.
Correct.
They're a Pakistan-aligned group operating under the broader Transparent Tribe umbrella, sometimes tracked by analysts as APT-36.
Yep.
And their target is highly specific. They are going after Afghanistan's Ministry of Finance, provincial revenue directorates, and Pashto-speaking government officials.
And the execution chain they're using here is exactly what you'd expect from a sophisticated group. But it's tailored brilliantly to bypass modern defenses by using the victim's own operating system against them.
Okay, let's break that down.
It starts with a ZIP archive delivered via a spear phishing email. And inside that ZIP is a malicious Windows shortcut file, an LNK file.
Okay, I'm looking at the rest of this attack chain in the notes, and it sounds like a bowl of alphabet soup.
It does.
I mean, LNK files leveraging menshta.exe to fetch an HTA, dropping a DLL loader to launch XenoRAT. Let's translate this for a listener who isn't a reverse engineer.
Sure.
Why use all these weird acronyms instead of just, you know, attaching a virus to an email?
Because attaching a standard virus to an email gets caught by antivirus instantly. It's too noisy.
Right.
Instead, they use a tactic called living off the land. They are using Microsoft's own built-in legitimate administrative tools to do the dirty work.
Got it.
So you send a shortcut file, the LNK. When the user clicks it, it tells Windows to open its own HTML application runner, which is that insta.xea.
And since that's a trusted Windows component, the security software usually just ignores it.
Exactly. It just waves it through. Mm-hmm. That trusted tool then reaches out to a compromised Afghan education website to download a script.
So it's basically using the computer's own immune system to hide the disease.
Effectively, yes.
Yeah.
That script establishes persistence by hiding in the computer's registry, and it pretends to be Microsoft Edge.
Wow.
Meanwhile, it pops open a completely legitimate-looking decoy document to keep the victim distracted while it silently loads a remote access Trojan called XenoRAT in the background.
The specificity of the distraction is what blows my mind here.
It's very well done.
They deliberately used Pashto language file names because that is the main language spoken in Afghan government circles. They crafted the decoy document to look like a standard revenue report.
Yep.
So they designed it to blend perfectly into the daily mundane workflow of a government finance official.
Exactly.
But here's my question for you on this one. We are talking about a nation-state-aligned group, APT-36. Why go through all this incredible effort, you know, compromising education domains, tailoring Pashto language lures, setting up registry persistence, just to drop a free open-source tool like XenoRAT 1.8.7?
Right.
I mean, why not use some custom million-dollar spyware?
It really comes down to the economics and strategy of cyber warfare.
How so?
Well, if an intelligence agency uses their custom, proprietary, multi-million-dollar malware, and it gets caught by investigators, they just burned a massive asset.
Well, that makes sense.
And they leave undeniable forensic evidence of exactly who launched the attack.
Ah, so it's about plausible deniability again.
That is the entire point. If they use a free tool they literally just downloaded from GitHub, it costs them $0.
Right.
And if it gets caught, investigators can't definitively point the finger because literally anyone with an internet connection could have deployed it.
That's a great point.
Plus, frankly, XenoRAT is highly capable. I mean, it gives the attacker total control over the infected system.
When you say total control, what does that actually look like for the victim?
It sets up an encrypted connection back to the attacker server. And from there, the attacker can silently log every single keystroke.
Terrifying.
They can take screenshots. They can turn on the webcam and microphone without the little warning light coming on.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And they can set up a SOCKS5 proxy tunnel to pivot deeper into the government's internal network.
Oh.
And then, when they've stolen everything they need, the RAT can securely uninstall itself to completely erase the evidence that it was ever there.
So it might be free and open source, but it's basically a digital Swiss Army knife.
It absolutely is.
Uh-huh.
And this specific targeting fits perfectly into a broader regional intelligence strategy.
Right, because didn't researchers find something similar recently?
They did. Security researchers uncovered another Transparent Tribe campaign targeting Indian military and defense infrastructure.
Okay.
And in that case, they used weaponized Linux desktop files to deploy a completely different implant called DeskRat. And they hid that behind lures related to armored vehicle procurement.
So the end game here is just broad regional intelligence gathering. You compromise the military to know their capabilities, and you compromise the finance ministries because, well, budgets hold incredibly sensitive geopolitical data.
Budgets, foreign aid allocations, internal revenue metrics. I mean, if you have that data, you have a very clear, unfiltered picture of a nation's stability and strategic priorities.
So for you listening right now, whether you work in a massive government agency or just a small private sector business, the practical takeaway here is about hypervigilance against the mundane.
Yes.
Social engineering works best when it perfectly mimics your everyday environment.
Exactly.
You need to be incredibly suspicious of shortcut files, those LNK files, hiding inside ZIP archives. Even if the file name looks exactly like the kind of boring financial document you expect to receive on a Tuesday morning.
Because attackers are actively exploiting your routine trust. It literally takes just one momentary lapse in judgment to compromise an entire network.
Which brings us to a really fascinating intersection. Attackers want your credentials. They want your cookies, your passwords, your cloud keys. And the universal security advice we always give to you, the listener, is to use a password manager.
Right. Consolidate your digital life.
Exactly. Secure it behind strong encryption and turn on two-factor authentication. But what happens when the very tools we tell you to use to protect yourself come under direct fire?
You're talking about the recent incident with Dashlane.
I am. On May 31st, 2026, Dashlane disclosed that an external threat actor launched a highly coordinated brute force attack directly against their user accounts.
And the attackers had a very specific goal here. They were trying to brute force their way past two-factor authentication protections.
Right.
So that they could register new, unauthorized devices on existing users' accounts.
And to Dashlane's credit, their built-in security controls did catch the unusually high volume of login attempts.
Which is what you want to see.
Yeah, they triggered temporary account suspensions to block the bots, which is great. But the attackers actually succeeded in a handful of cases.
They did.
Dashlane disclosed that fewer than 20 users on their personal subscription plan had their encrypted vaults completely downloaded by the attackers.
Right.
Now, just to clarify for everyone listening, Dashlane's internal corporate systems were not breached. This was an attack on the individual user accounts themselves.
That is a critical distinction to make. The breach occurred at the user account perimeter, not the back-end infrastructure of the company itself.
But this is where it gets really interesting and why I open the show with that safe analogy.
Right, the titanium safe.
Exactly. If you're listening right now and your heart just skipped a beat because you use a password manager, take a deep breath. Let's explain why the system actually worked.
Okay, let's hear it.
Think of your password manager's two-factor authentication, like the bouncer at the door of an exclusive club. And your encrypted vault is the VIP room in the back.
I like where this is going.
So the attackers managed to guess the secret handshake, trick the bouncer, and get inside the club. They bypassed 2FA. They walked right up to the VIP room and just took it. But here's the thing. Because of how zero-knowledge architecture works, the VIP room doesn't have a door.
Right.
It's a solid, impenetrable block of concrete. The only person with the sledgehammer to get inside is you, using your master password.
That is a genuinely great way to visualize defense in depth.
Thank you.
But I know exactly what people are thinking when they hear this.
Right, and I actually have to push back on my own analogy here.
Let's do it.
As a user, if attackers manage to brute force past my two-factor authentication and register a new device to my account, Isn't that a massive failure of the security perimeter?
It is a failure, yes.
I mean, why should I continue to trust a password manager if my entire vault can just be downloaded by some bot that guesses the right secondary codes?
It raises a totally valid question about how modern security architecture is designed to fail safely.
Fail safely.
Yeah. What you're describing is absolutely a failure of the outer perimeter. Bypassing 2FA is a serious incident. However, this scenario is exactly why zero-knowledge password managers rely on multiple layers of defense.
Okay.
The system is designed with the explicit assumption that the outer perimeter might eventually fall.
So explain how that zero-knowledge aspect actually protects the user after the perimeter falls.
So a zero-knowledge architecture means that Dashlane itself does not know your master password.
Okay.
It's never stored on their servers in a readable format, which means Dashlane cannot decrypt your data, and neither can anyone who steals the data from them.
Right.
The final impenetrable layer of defense is the master password itself. Because the downloaded vault data is heavily mathematically encrypted, the fact that the attacker possesses the file is largely irrelevant.
They just have a useless string of scrambled code.
Exactly. A useless string of code, unless they also have the master password to unlock it.
So even though the thief stole the safe, is built out of alien titanium, and the combination is 50 digits long.
Any attempts to crack open that downloaded vault offline will mathematically fail. Our current computing power just cannot break that encryption.
Wow.
But there is one major caveat here.
Always a caveat.
Always. That only holds true unless the user's master password is trivial or highly predictable. If your master password is password 123 or your dog's name in a year, the titanium encryption doesn't matter. They will just run a dictionary attack and crack the downloaded file in seconds.
Right.
But if your master password is long, strong, and unique, the downloaded vault is completely useless to the attacker.
Okay, so the practical takeaway for you listening is very clear. First, if you were not directly notified by Dashlane regarding the specific incident, your vault was not downloaded. There's no impact on you.
None at all.
But you should absolutely use this as a wake-up call. Log into your password manager today. Whichever one you use, whether it's Dashlane, 1Password, Bitwarden, whatever.
Yep, check them all.
Review all the registered devices on your account and kick out any old phones or browsers you don't recognize. Ensure your 2FA is active, robust, and preferably using an authenticator app rather than just SMS text messages.
SMS is just too vulnerable right now.
Exactly. And above all else, make absolutely certain your master password is a long, unique passphrase that is difficult to guess. It is quite literally your last line of defense when the outer walls fall.
It is the absolute cornerstone of your digital identity. If it's weak, the whole structure collapses.
Which perfectly wraps up today's Cyber Mornings Daily Briefing.
It really does tie it all together.
We started with stolen GitHub session cookies completely bypassing enterprise code reviews. Then we moved to tailored Windows shortcut files hunting Afghan government workers by living off the land.
And finished with brute force bots pulling encrypted vaults straight out of password managers.
The through line is just undeniable. Your digital identities, your credentials, and your access tokens are the ultimate prize.
The adversaries are persistent. They honestly don't care if you're a cloud engineer or a finance minister. They are optimizing their attacks for whatever environment you happen to operate in.
And that leaves us with a final provocative thought for you to ponder as you go about your day.
Let's hear it.
We've seen sophisticated supply chain attacks bypass institutional code reviews just because of a single stolen session cookie. We've seen physical password vaults downloaded despite active two-factor authentication protections.
Right.
Are we moving toward a future where we must simply assume our outer network defenses are already breached?
I think we might be.
I mean, should we stop trusting our perimeters entirely and just accept that our innermost individual encryption is the only thing truly standing between us and total compromise?
It's a paradigm shift that the security industry and everyday users might all have to make sooner rather than later. Assume breach and encrypt accordingly.
Definitely something to think about. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Take these lessons, apply them to your own digital life.
Stay safe out there.
Audit those developer configurations. Stay paranoid about those unexpected email attachments. Check the strength of those master passwords. And above all, stay curious. We'll catch you next time.